Okay, let's start by introducing ourselves so you know who you're talking to. You know Lindsay. Well, you've talked to Lindsay. I'm Jessica Wagner.
I'm Autumn Trimback.
I'm Kaval Kapadia.
Okay.
Okay, just start out with the general stuff. What is your date of birth if you don't have to give us a year if you don't want?
I'm proud of the fact that I'm 63.
Okay.
18th of May, 1946.
Yeah, May 18th, 1946. Okay, are you currently married?
Yes, I am.
Do you have any children?
I have two of mine and three stepchildren.
Okay. Are they boys or girls?
Eight grandkids.
Oh, wow. Life keeps you busy, huh?
Yeah. I got four girls and one boy. And then on the grandkids, let's see, there's three girls, five boys.
Wow. You're making up for all those girls.
Yeah.
Okay, and where do you currently live?
I live in Bryan, Texas. B-R-Y-A-N. Texas.
Okay.
Which is right next to the home of the Fighting Texas Aggies at Charlie Station, Texas.
Do you work at the ER there?
No, I used to work for St. Joseph.
Okay.
But urgent care.
Uh-huh.
I've changed positions. I'm now working for University of Texas managed medical branch, correctional managed care.
Okay.
Correctional medicine.
Okay, so where did you grow up? Like, where's your hometown?
Well, let's see, I was born in Houston.
Okay.
And, Dad was in the Army, so we moved around a bit. Germany to California to Italy, back to Texas, and then he got out in 54. We moved here to Bryan College Station area, so I grew up here and joined the Navy in 65 and been around the world.
Wow, you really have. That's quite a background. Okay, so you probably went to high school in...
College Station. A&M Consolidated High School.
Okay, so you didn't have to move during your your high school years?
No.
That's good.
From the second grade,
okay. One second. We're going to try to turn the volume up on this. We're having a hard time hearing you. Do you know how to turn the volume up?
That's as high as it goes.
Where is the volume on here? Do you know?
I mean, it's right there, but...
It's not. Oh. Okay. Okay. Hopefully we'll be able to hear you a little better. Okay, so where did you attend college?
Well, after I joined the Navy, I got selected for the physician assistant program. I did some junior college, and stuff while I was, before I applied. I went to Florida Junior College. The Navy sent me there. My associate degree in Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay.
And I got selected for the PA program, and I went to Shepherd Air Force Base, Texas, where we matriculated with Nebraska.
Okay.
So I graduated from Nebraska.
Okay. So I guess just for our knowledge, we don't. When the PA program started, did the Navy recruit you to be a part of that?
Oh, I was already in the Navy.
Okay, so
I was fortunate. I was one of those lucky people. The PA program started. The first graduates graduated in 1965.
Okay.
Started in 65. Graduated in 67. And. I was in the Navy that time. And after I went to junior college, the Navy decided to start a PA program. They had started, I guess, in 70 with what they called, it was a physician assistant program, and it was kind of modeled after the MedX program out in the Pacific Northwest, the original program, where it was like 3 years of preceptorship and clerkship.
Oh, okay.
But they quickly decided that they wanted to do something differently, so they went out and selected a group of people in 73. They selected 25 of us to go. We applied.
Okay.
And they had 25 of us went to University of went to Shepherd Air Force Base under the University of Nebraska, and 10 went to Georgetown University in Washington, D.C.
So were you the first class of the Navy, or no?
I was in the first group that was selected from the Navy.
Okay.
Okay. I wasn't actually in the first class that started at Shepherd, because they had a couple of, had some people that were had already started in the old program, and they went ahead and sent them early.
Okay. So what inspired you to apply for the PA program? Because it was fairly new at that time.
I was a hospital corpsman in the Navy.
Okay.
And I went to Vietnam as a hospital corpsman with the Marines. And I enjoyed practicing medicine. But when it became time for me to re-enlist or get out, after I came back from Vietnam in 69, it was time for me to re-enlist.
Okay.
And I decided that there were no jobs in the outside world at that time that I was qualified to do. And with my lack of formal education, you know, I quit high school halfway through my senior year, joined the Navy. I got my GED while I was in the Navy, but, you know, I didn't feel like I was qualified to do much more than stay in the Navy, so I re-enlisted for aerospace physiology technician and did aerospace physiology, teaching people how to wear useful pressure suits and things like that. And then when the program, when the Navy started their program for PAs, I read about it while I was in junior college, and I said, this is something I want to do, so I applied to, you know, I wanted to, as soon as I was eligible to go, that's where I wanted to go, and then about that time, they came up with their a call for applications, and I was fortunate enough to be one of the first 20 to 34 people accepted.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Under that new program, there were 8 guys that had already started.
Okay.
Under the old program, and they let them go ahead and go to college too.
How did the old program different from the new program that you were in?
Well, the old program was they did 2 years of apprenticeship and a year of clerkship or preceptorship. And basically they worked one-on-one with a family practitioner or general practice doctor under some fairly strict protocols, and they did a little bit of reading and learning and whatever the doctor wanted them to read about, learn about. And before that first group completed their 3 years, they decided that they really wanted to get the guys with a little bit more formal education. So the program that I went through was a year of didactic, straight book work,
So it was 24 months.
So, and then those of us that had enough hours to get a bachelor's degree were conferred a bachelor's degree. Later on, the University of Nebraska offered masters for those of us, because the programs were, initial programs, there were a lot of they were junior college. Santa Fe Junior College in Florida had a two-year program.
Without a bachelor's?
I'm sorry?
So you didn't have to have a bachelor's to even join the two-year program?
Oh, in the PA program initially, and I think there's still a couple of, I think there's still one associate degree program that's still around. Of course, the first graduates got their bachelor's. The Duke guys.
Right.
They were bachelor's degree. And only if they had enough of the English credits and all that other stuff to be conferred a degree based upon their college program. Hmm. Most of the programs in the early years, they did not guarantee a degree. They guaranteed a certificate of completion.
Okay.
There are 8 schools here in Texas, and the last one is University of Texas Pan Am, which is down in Edmer, Texas. They just recently, I guess about 3 years ago, got accredited to confer a master's degree.
Huh, that's
interesting. However, all the education has always been on the graduate level.
Right.
It was always done at the graduate. The courses we took were graduate level courses, even though we may be getting a bachelor's degree or an associate degree or whatever, based upon our general education credits that we got.
Uh-huh.
The program for the certificate was always at a master's level.
Hmm. Interesting.
Even the first guys were. Master's level.
Okay. I guess my next question is kind of ties into what we were just talking about is the training. You know, we already discussed how that was different. Is anything else strikingly different to you about how it used to be versus the PA program now? Did you always have to take the pants, or was
I think the students are smarter, they're younger, and they're more women.
Yes. That's true at our school as well.
when I went and Ken went, they were primarily males, over 30, and every education, most of us didn't have, you know, some had associate degrees, but the majority of the people going to PA school did not have a degree. And in the, I guess in the 80s, they started, more and more of the schools went to master's programs. And now I think most of them are master's programs.
Yeah.
But some of them will still confer a certificate, and some of them still do a bachelor's, depending on the number of hours. It's just trying to get the prerequisite hours
right
to get in there.
Did you?
I think there's 150 schools now in the state.
There's a lot.
And each one of them has their own different what kind of hours that they require for you to be competitive. Program.
Yes, we've definitely ran into that.
Competitive, you know, it's still a very competitive program.
Yeah.
You know, there were, when I applied, there were, I think, 250, 260 applicants for 34 seats.
Wow.
Now the average is about 250, 300 applicants for about 30 seats in the various schools. Some of them have a few more, you know, they're accepting as many as 70.
Yeah.
in a class year, but they're not all starting at the same time.
Right.
So, you know, when the first conference I went to, APA conference I went to, was in Hollywood, Florida, we all fit in one hotel.
Oh, wow.
Now, it takes a city with a major conference center or convention center and as many as seven hotels to house the people. I mean, we went from under 1,000 to 65,000, I think. I don't remember what the exact numbers are, but, you know, there's like 47,000 members of the academy. That's a huge number.
Yeah.
When I became a member of the academy, there were 370 of us.
Wow. What? Just out of curiosity, what number are you on your state license?
My state license. Well, I didn't get my Texas license because I didn't need it in the Navy. I didn't get my Texas license until 1995, so my number is 1,224.
Okay. I thought you might have been one of the early numbers.
John Young is a lovely PA who's just down the road about 28 miles. He was the first graduate from the University of Texas Medical Branch Galveston PA program, and his license number is 0001.
Oh, wow. You don't get that privilege every day, do you?
But, you know, he's been a PA for 35 years, 36 years, 37 years.
Yeah. So, how long exactly were you in the Navy after, so you were in there when you were in PA school, and then how long did you stay?
I spent 30 and a half years in the Navy.
Wow.
10 of it as enlisted, and 20 as a PA.
Okay. How would you say that I don't want to say quality of care, but the way that you can care for patients, civilian versus non-civilian?
As opposed to military?
Yes.
Well, yeah, I've had the opportunity to talk to a couple of medical school groups and to the PAs. The students here at A&M that want to become PAs, and that question comes up a lot as far as, you know, because I was in the military and practiced both military and civilian. I think the respect, what we do in the military, we get to do a whole lot more than without worry of lawsuits, et cetera. Than they do in the civilian sector. The quality of care is medicine in the military, I think, is the best you can get.
Oh.
And I had the privilege of talking to a former Surgeon General of the Air Force who shared with an incident of a PA and I don't know his name, but one of the troops got took out a gunshot wound and it took out both lungs.
Mm-hmm.
And his liver, and normally that would have been fatal.
Uh-huh.
I mean, and 10 years ago that would have been a fatal catastrophic event. He was in Iraq. And they managed to keep him alive until a heart-lung team could get there. They didn't have the machine, but they hooked him up to some jury-rig, and they got him up to from Iraq out to Ramstein in Germany, and where they blew out a stump in flight, one of his stump of his lungs just blew out.
Wow.
And they managed to get him from the time he was hit to Ramstein operations, lung transplants, and back to the state, walking out of the hospital 28 days. Walked out of the hospital in 28 days.
Wow,
that's
wow.
military medicine, okay? You can't do that at any trauma center.
Right.
I mean, but, you know, he had excellent care all the way along with military medicine. So what we get to do is different than what the civilian sector can do.
Right.
Because frequently we're out in areas where that's all they have. Aboard a ship or at a battalion aid station, a forward combat support hospital, cache. The PAs are out there doing things that in the civilian sector, they'd be standing by helping them.
Mm-hmm.
They're out there doing the chest tubes and cracos and crates and appendectomies and stuff that would just have to be done.
Yeah.
You
you mentioned also that you spoke at some of the medical schools. Are you affiliated with any programs, or do you do any of the?
Texas A&M has they have a medical school here at A&M.
Mm-hmm.
They also have a Future Aggie PA Association. They don't have a PA school. They have Future Aggie PA Association for those students who want to become PAs, and I've had the privilege of being asked to talk to both students who want to become doctors and students who want to become PAs, and a few students who want to become nurse practitioners. I have a good relationship with the nurse practitioners. I've been but I wouldn't want to be one.
And why would that be? What do you think the difference is?
The biggest difference between a PA and a nurse practitioner is PAs are trained under the medical model. We are part of the medical team partnering with our physician. Nurses are trained under a nursing model. They are nurses. They don't And they collaborate with the physician, but they feel they don't have to be partners necessarily with the physician. The most states require that a nurse practitioner practice in a field of medicine in the area that they have been trained. For example, an emergency nurse practitioner may only see acute care, urgent stuff. They cannot treat long-term diabetes. They can treat the urgent effects of diabetes or high blood pressure, but they can't treat the chronic disease. They can't manage the disease. A OBGYN nurse practitioner can only see women as it relates to pregnancy.
Right.
Or to their gynecological problems.
Okay.
And so if a man comes in with a cold, they can't see him.
Yeah.
Legally.
Yeah.
So, and because nurse practitioners seem to have gravitated to specialty, and PAs have stayed, you know, they've always stayed and seem to... Although we practice in all 38 specialties now are recognized with the Academy of PA practice, we still test and are held to the standard of general medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So when a physician wants someone to help out in their office, they may want somebody who can take care of those chronic diabetic people in their surgical practice. They can't hire a surgical nurse practitioner because a surgical nurse practitioner is not qualified to take care of the chronic diabetes or hypertension and other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Under the state law. And a lot of, I think there's a lot of the doctors that, I'll just use Texas as an example. The Texas, we come under the Texas Board of Medical Examiners as the Texas Board of Physician Assistant Examiners are a part of the Texas Board of Medical Examiners. Nurse practitioners don't fall in that.
Huh.
They fall under the Texas Board of Nurse Examiners.
Interesting.
Our requirement for certification is different than their requirement.
Mm-hmm.
In order for me to maintain my license in the state of Texas, not just to be a certified PA, I have to maintain 40 hours of CME every year and report it to the board.
Mm-hmm.
The nurse practitioner is a nurse practitioner, and the nurse board of nurse the board of nurse examiners may or may not require any kind of CME or any of that other stuff.
Huh? I didn't know that.
They don't have to. In some states, they don't even have to test.
Really?
Now we're talking about the NCCPA is talking about going to 10 years, mm-hmm, or 12 years, where it's been 6 years. Certification.
Mm-hmm.
And some states don't require that a PA maintain their certification, but most states require that they maintain a certain level of CME.
Yeah.
Because that's what the board requires. Nurse practitioners say that they can practice on their own, and they can. They just can't write prescriptions in 90% of the states.
Oh, really?
Because they have a collaborative agreement with their physician,
mm-hmm,
with a physician who gives them prescriptive privileges. They cannot write for controlled substances in those states that allow controlled substances. So Texas is one of them.
Huh.
Unless they have a collaborative agreement with their supervisor, with a physician, which they choose to call a collaborative agreement, we would choose to call a partnership.
Right.
A supervising position.
That's interesting.
So when it comes down to what the doctors are more comfortable with, they're more comfortable with someone that they can say, I'm responsible for supervising you, and if you screw up, then it's on me.
Yeah.
Whereas a nurse practitioner, they're in a collaborative agreement, and if they screw up,
it's on the physician.
The law is a little bit confusing there.
Yeah. What would you say, like, have you been on any teams or part of any programs that have made, like, significant, discoveries or
contributions
to the PA field? Any research or anything like that?
I don't know. I was the first PA in the Navy to go to sea. I set the standard for PAs to go to sea.
Yes.
I wrote their instructions. I told them what the was to what standard they'd hold them to.
Okay.
I think that initially the PAs that followed me were a little bit myth, because I think that PAs, you know, in the Navy need to have a tour at sea. And some of them had, before they became PAs, had quite a bit of sea time.
Uh-huh.
And they got right. But as they grew, I think that the ability to go out and practice medicine all over the world, and show what PAs can do is, I think it's benefited Navy medicine and certainly Navy PAs.
Mm-hmm.
The PA program as a whole, I think that the Navy PAs have had a lot more varied experiences and have had a lot more responsibility based upon the fact that we early on started talking about setting us to sea and putting us out there on the pointy end of the spear and letting the doctors that are trained at Best Medical School and don't know the first thing about the pointy end of the ship sit back on the shore and take care of what we sent them in.
Have you ever served on a board like the American Academy of Physician Assistants or obviously a member?
I'm on the awards committee this year. I served as a member of the reference committee for the House of Delegates. I've been a delegate to the House of Delegates a lot more years than I can count. I did get have the privilege. I was the first PA to serve on the Navy PA selection board.
Okay.
Back in 91.
Okay.
And you know they'd never had a PA do that. I was the first PA in the Navy to make 04.
What is that? We don't know what that is.
Lieutenant Commander.
Lieutenant 04, he said. Wow, that's pretty impressive.
And so, you know, I've had the privilege to be. I was assigned as the my job at Camp Lejeune was the special assistant to the senior medical officer of Camp Lejeune, which meant that the doctor that was assigned as medical officer didn't want to do the job, and I had to manage. I think we had 109 enlisted, 10 PAs, 5 doctors, 2 nurse practitioners, and 5 RNs that took care of 150,000 Marines and sailors.
Wow. What would your favorite moments in your career be? Any like special patients that you really hold dear, near and dear, or any situation that you?
I've had several. I've been a PA for over 35 years.
Can you give us like one?
I've been around the world. I've been from 3 degrees south of the Arctic Circle to 3 degrees north of the Antarctic.
Wow.
Climbed the pyramids of Egypt, walked the footsteps of Jesus, and rode horseback in the Andes, looking down on the back of an Andean continent.
Wow. That's amazing. That's...
Toured the citadel in Vietnam, the ancient citadel in Vietnam before the Tet Offensive, and not as a PA, but as a civilian. I mean, as a enlisted guy.
Mm-hmm.
I took care of a cholera epidemic.
A cholera?
Cholera epidemic on a little island in the South Pacific.
What was that like?
The ring of John Paul II. I've been blessed with so many things that I've been able to do. Both because I was in the Navy, because I was a PA, and because I was just lucky.
Did you just say you took care of Pope John Paul II?
I kissed his ring. Yeah.
You kissed his ring.
I kissed his ring.
Okay.
Yes, John Paul II visited Guam, and I don't remember what year it was. I was the special liaison to the Secret Service for Ronald Reagan's visit to Guam and for John Paul II's visit to Guam, which meant that I was in charge of the emergency room and emergency response for time he was 4 hours out of Guam, till he was 4 hours before he landed on Guam, and till 4 hours after he left the island of Guam. He was there for 3 days.
Okay.
So I coordinated between the civilian and the military emergency response and the Secret Service. My job was to tell them who was authorized to be in the emergency room in the event that the boat came, hadn't come into the emergency room.
Okay.
And then, as the boat was getting ready to leave, his Monsignor security guy came and asked if there's anything we could do, the Pope could do for us. And being raised Catholic, I thought my mother would like an autographed picture of the Pope.
Aww. That was nice.
Can I get a picture of John Paul II, His Excellency, signed? And he said, well, what would you like to meet the Pope? I said, sure. So me and about 20 of my foremen and you got people that had been supporting the event were invited to a hangar at the air station in Guam. And we just thought, well, the Pope will stand up there and do the blessing and we'll be gone. And no, we were invited to individually come up and be individually blessed by the Pope.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
I got to.
That's really cool.
Kiss his ring. Mm-hmm. I will say that I was so excited that I got to kiss his ring that I stumbled and cut my lip on his ring.
Oh, no!
Busted my lip. The Pope busted my lip. So I'm one of them.
That's a good story.
But John Paul II was such a special person that, you know, that was not unique. That's what he wanted done just about anywhere he went. So, you know, he had those kind of special things. I just happened to get to share it.
Yeah. If you could just give us one thing, like, the best thing about being a PA and what's the worst, what would you say? I know those are deep questions.
You know, the best thing out of you, what makes me happiest about being a PA, just the whole experience. I mean, it's difficult to put one thing out or what is the best. I enjoy the hell out of doing what I'm doing, and I feel blessed that I'm privileged that the PA program is what we get to do. Dr. Stead, his vision of it allows us me to do what I don't think I would have ever been able to do before. You know, the satisfaction that we get,
mm-hmm.
and the heartbreak we get when we practice, and our patients either love us or hate us, but we do what we should do, and it's just I'm so thankful that I was allowed to do what I get to do. And I had the privilege of meeting Dr. Stead about 2 years before he died. He was on his, I think, 90th birthday. I don't remember. It was one of his birthdays. And I was at Duke on another course. And I got to, we went to celebrate PA Day because his birthday is also PA Day. He was there, and he was so bright and energetic, as old as he was. And I got to coming up, and I thanked him for his vision. And the man was so humble that he thanked the PAs for bringing his vision to life.
And wow.
That's, you know, those are some special moments that being a PA is all about.
Mm-hmm.
What's the worst thing about being a PA? I think there are a group of people who have who don't respect what we are able to do, and they kind of tie our hands and feet.
Mm.
Don't understand how we can help. The frustration of trying to deal with some of the red tape so that you know, are getting the care done. One of the nice things about the military is I didn't have to deal with all that red tape stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They said, can you do it? And I said, Charlie Golf 1, which is a Navy signal for proceeding to your assistance, and head on down the road. Get it done. You either get it done or you don't get it done.
Mm-hmm.
In the civilian sector, there's more people, well, you're just a PA, so you obviously mm-hmm. don't know what you're doing.
Minus all your experience, right?
Yeah.
What?
Well, and early on as a PA, I had a young doctor in the emergency room. Now, I was 2 years graduated from, you know, completing my program, so I was still a young PA.
Mm-hmm.
Just PA school. And we worked in the emergency room, and I was sewing up a gentleman. I think it was his cheek that was cut in the fight. And I was sewing it up. And this resident, family practice resident, walks in and says, you're just a PA. You can't do that. And I excused myself from the patient and then went over and informed the young doctor that I was sewing up people in the fields of Vietnam underneath a poncho using the red lens flashlight. When he was still peeing his diaper. and we came to an understanding that being a doctor and being a PA able to do some things, that there's a whole lot of difference. And, you know, I was did the triage for the hours during the Tet Offensive in 68 in Vietnam. Triaged over 1,000 casualties a day for 3 days straight.
Wow.
So, that was as a young enlisted, that was not as a PA. So the experience that we get in the military is a whole lot different from what best medical school might be able to give them.
Right.
And, you know, I haven't come across that, probably because of my gray hair. you know, I certainly have a lot more confidence now than I did
mm-hmm.
Back in the 70s as a PA, but, you know, I've seen a lot more, you know, mm-hmm. learned a lot more, and medicine has advanced a lot more. But there's still some of that perception that, well, if you're not a doctor,
yeah,
you don't know what you're doing.
Well,
And that, I guess that is the thing that hurts me the most.
Yeah.
Because I know that the PAs, there's probably, there are some bad PAs out there. I just have never had an opportunity to meet them.
There's some bad doctors, too.
Yeah, there are. There's a lot of bad doctors. There's probably more bad doctors than there are bad PAs.
Yeah.
But then there are more doctors than there are PAs.
That's true. Where do you see the, you know, with our new government... Where do you see the future for PA, the PA profession? What do you see it expanding into?
Well, I'm concerned about socialized medicine.
Uh-huh.
The doctors are going to start getting out of practice. And mm-hmm. if in order for the PAs to continue to be part of partners in medicine, and the way we're designed in order to we're partners with our physicians. We're not tried to go out on our own and not try to take patients away from them. We're trying to help them see the patients better, get have more access to care.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not reimbursed, they can't afford us.
Right.
If they're not reimbursed for what we do, they can't afford us. And if they can't afford us, then medicine is going to fall on its face. We'll be back to the early 60s level of care, access to care, that was what spurred Dr. Stead to develop the programs.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Pacific Northwest, you know, the those programs out there, the MedX program out there, there were something sorely needed at the time, and I don't want us to go back to having to scramble. We have a good number of PAs now. I think that the ability to have access to care, other countries now look at PAs and say, mm-hmm. what we do. I mean, you know, the Canadians have had PAs now for about 12 years. And, you know, they came down and looked at what we were doing, what the PAs were doing in the United States, and they were all military. And I have some very good friends with the Canadians.
Mm-hmm.
That came down and looked to see what we were doing and developed their programs and sold it to the doctors. And the doctors have had access to that's put access to medical care in parts of Canada that they never had before. We have PAs that are practicing in Scotland and Navy U.S. trained PAs. They don't have a program in England, but they're practicing Scotland and in England now.
Hmm.
They're here that their socialized medicine is falling apart. And
yeah.
So the PAs there may be coming back. And the practice is a lot different. France has looked at PA programs. Russia has looked at PA programs to try to get access to care, affordable access to care.
Mm-hmm.
So with the new program, with all the problems of this new healthcare reform, if you take the thousands of pages that they've got in there with all the little perks for this group and that group and all that, when you brought it down, and if it did, I'm afraid that it's going to interfere with our access to care, because it's not going to be affordable.
Mm.
And, you know, if a guy can't afford to buy insurance now, making a law that says you got to buy it,
yeah.
What's he going to do? He's going to get finally taken to jail. I mean,
yeah.
Where I'm practicing medicine now is in the Correctional Institute, state prison. There are people there. They're some of the sickest people I've ever had to see.
Uh-huh.
You know, young people with cancers and colectomies because of ulcerative colitis and kidney failure, severe renal failure at 30.
Wow.
On dialysis 4 hours a day, 3 days a week. I mean, these are sick people.
Uh-huh.
In the civilian sector, they couldn't afford it.
Hmm.
They'd be dead.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're in the institution where they're now taken care of, and with under the plan, as I see it, and this is my old conservative guy saying, the plan that as I see it, the access to care is going to dwindle because you're I don't know how much you're paying for your education. But on average, as I understand it, it's about $95,000.
Yeah.
About $45,000 a year. So a two-year program is going to cost you $90,000 to be a PA.
Uh-huh.
It costs you about $45,000 a year to be a doctor.
Yep.
So 4 years is going to be $180,000 of debt. You can't make that seeing 20 patients a day and getting reimbursed $4 a patient.
Yeah.
The math don't add up.
Right, exactly.
Because everybody's got to eat.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm afraid of. So the doctors will quit.
Mm-hmm.
There are already doctors. A lot of doctors are bailing out of Medicare, and Medicaid, because they say, "I'm not going to see them because I'm not getting reimbursed."
Yeah, right.
$14 what the doctor gets reimbursed for seeing a Medicare patient. $14. If it costs him $55 to see the patient,
right,
he gets reimbursed $14. Is reimbursed, I think, $12 for an inpatient a new patient inpatient,
mm-hmm.
and $6 for every day he comes by and visits with his patient.
Yeah, it's
the reimbursement, and they want to cut that by 20%.
Yeah, so, it's not going to work.
It's not going to work out.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of depressing for us.
if we go where I think that we need to go, and increase the responsibility and access to care through the PAs, and encourage physicians by reimbursing better what the PA does, that encourages the physician to hire the PA,
right,
the access of care, I think will be great. I mean, the PA is still the fastest growing, one of the fastest growing professions in the United States.
So with all that being said, what advice would you give future students, to make them good PAs and to kind of overcome all these obstacles?
Well, what I told every, I've had the privilege of having about 40 shadow students.
Oh, wow.
Wanted to be PAs, or said they wanted to be PAs, and they come and see what PAs do, and I tell every one of them, if you would pay somebody to do what you do, then that's what you want and you need to do. Every one of y'all are smart enough to do the job, otherwise program wouldn't accept you, because mm-hmm. they got a whole lot of smart kids applying.
Yeah.
The commitment that you have to doing the job is what's going to make you an outstanding PA. Or do something else. And I have had a couple of students, and I just flat told them, I said, you're smart and you love medicine, but you love something else a lot more. And two of them are now doing missionary work. One's a nutritionist, and the other one is a kinesiology.
Wow.
And one's in Guyana, and one's in I forget where, in Africa. But they said they were committed to being PAs, but they were more committed to doing what they felt their calling was,
his missionary work. Which is good.
And, sorry?
I said that's good. We need those too.
It certainly is. It certainly is. That's because they're doing what they felt their heart was driving, not to be a PA because that's what mom wanted or that's what I think I want, but doing what they really truly love to do.
Mm-hmm.
And in these cases, it's doing Christian missionary work.
Yeah.
And that's what makes them, whether they get paid for it or not.
Right.
That's what made them happy. And that kind of drive and commitment that we see, I personally think I see in a lot of the young PAs, that this is what they want to do. And that, I think that's the commitment. If they're not committed enough to do that,
mm-hmm.
then either save their money or get a different education.
Yeah. Well, we've taken up an hour of your time, so we really appreciate it.
Is there any other questions that you guys have for Mr. Powell right now?
Nope.
Can would you care if we have additional questions that we may have forgotten to ask you? Could we email you and
That's
ask?
Fine.
Okay. Do we have office?
Where I'm working now, I don't get to check my email until after I get home.
Okay.
So, because in a prison, they don't let you have
right
a lot of stuff to the outside because somebody else can get on it.
Right.
Yeah, you know, that's not fun stuff. But you know, I'll try to get back to you as quickly, as promptly as I can.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
And I'm going to tell you this. I'm really honored that you chose me to talk to. I really am.
Well,
you
know, we really appreciate it.
It's such a special person to me.
Well, we hope to make you proud with our presentation.
And the fact that he chose you for me, or you chose me for him, I'm really honored that I'm just one of a bunch of PAs.
Yeah, well, you're special, so. Well, thank you very much. We really appreciate it. It was nice talking to you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for taking the time out.
Y'all have a great day.
Thank you.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.